This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have more awareness, people talking about coronavirus more than Lassa fever. But the truth is that Lassa fever is killing people at the moment.
That was Dr. Malik King, pointing out Nigeria is battling an outbreak of Lassa fever as the coronavirus threatens the country as well. Details coming up. Also, 6,400 cases and 200 deaths of the coronavirus recorded so far in Africa. And Lesotho's Prime Minister Thomas Tabane is accusing members of his own party of plotting to topple his government. Those stories and more next on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The head of the African Centers for Disease Control says the opportunity is now for African countries and citizens to address what he termed an existential threat posed by the coronavirus for the continent. There are over 6,400 cases and 200 deaths recorded so far in Africa, but the numbers are expected to grow in the coming weeks. VOA's Jason Patinkin has the report.
The COVID-19 virus has infected over a million people worldwide and killed more than 50,000 after originating in the central Chinese city of Wuhan late last year. Europe and North America now bear the virus's worst disease burden, but the virus is rapidly spreading in Africa. On Thursday, Dr. John Nkengasong, the director of the African Centers for Disease Control, told a virtual press conference from South Africa that the coming weeks are key to ensuring the disease does not get out of control in Africa.
This is Africa's problem, and we are at the dawn of an outbreak, and we have to find solutions that are African in nature to address our situation. We cannot rely on the experiences that are happening in Singapore or occurring in the United States.
Nkengasong said Africa likely has more cases than current numbers show due to lack of test kits. He said that African nations are relying on imported test kits, which are in short supply, and must find other ways to test for the disease. He suggested using blood serum tests that detect antibodies produced by infected people and possibly diagnosing cases based on symptoms. Nkengasong added that social distancing is a proven public health measure, but Africa must find ways to adapt it to densely crowded urban slums.
It's a must-do. This is not a situation of we are trying and working hard. It is a question of we have to win the battle against COVID in Africa in order to survive. It is an existential threat for our continent.
The leading African health official warned there is great uncertainty about how the virus will impact Africa because the continent struggles with other disease outbreaks.
We have so many people infected with malaria, with tuberculosis and HIV. We have a large number of population that is malnourished. So we just don't know how these factors will play into the dynamics and the projection of COVID-19.
Another unknown is how the virus will affect the continent's young population. In China, data showed the virus mostly killed elderly patients.
At least 70% of our population is less than 30 years old, and that may also be a factor, which we don't know which direction that will play. If we look at strictly from mortality, you could argue on the basis of what we saw in China that this might be something that will play in our favor. But we just don't know, because we are beginning to see also in the United States a good number of young people are in hospital and require oxygen support and other services there. So we are still early. As I said, this is the morning of a pandemic. As we used to say in HIV/AIDS, you have to know your epidemic. In this situation, we have to know a pandemic in order to better respond and develop systems that are adapted for our own response.
Despite the unknowns, Nkengasong said African countries must act now during ongoing lockdowns.
The opportunity is now to intensify our public health measures so that we take advantage of the 2 weeks of the lockdown to do a couple of things. One, identify people that are infected, isolate them. Second, identify their contacts, follow them for a period of time. If we do those things, with these lockdown measures there, then we have a good chance of that. When we open and relax these lockdown measures in a progressive manner, we can contain the virus.
He called on African countries and communities to work together to fight the disease.
We cannot win the battle or the war against COVID-19 in Africa if we do not work collaboratively, if we do not work cooperatively, if we do not communicate effectively across the continent. COVID-19 will not be resolved in any member state except it is resolved in all member states. That is a fact. So assuming that South Africa locks down and clean up and everything, you have zero COVID cases there, then there's nothing that tells you that you don't have imported cases from the SADC region or even from afar. It's very clear from the onset that the battles will have to be fought locally, but the war has to be won globally. It requires the cooperation and collaboration of the community. Without the community cooperating fully in this, it would not be effective.
There is no proven cure for COVID-19. Nkengasong said a vaccine will not be available for at least a year. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Washington.
The prospects for Africa's energy producers were looking good before the worldwide COVID-19 outbreak. As a result of the outbreak, economies across the world are shuttered. Most energy projects in Africa are closed, contracts are being cancelled, and demands for oil is low. But one of Africa's top energy dealmakers is convinced that African oil and gas producers could emerge stronger from the crisis. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Everyone who's anyone on the continental energy scene knows NJ Ayuk. The Cameroonian lawyer, who's based in Johannesburg, is an advisor to governments and some of the globe's major energy firms. While COVID-19 is causing a worldwide economic disaster, says Ayuk, Africa's energy potential will remain impossible to ignore in the future.
I am very optimistic about it, I think, because Africa still remains the largest untapped and unexplored reserves in the world. And when you have...
He points to countries like Algeria and Congo, which he believes were ready to produce gas on a large scale before the pandemic.
You had Equatorial Guinea boosting gas production by signing a $500 million deal that would take gas from one area to another. Gabon had changed its regulatory regime to attract more investments. Almost 9 new licenses signed with international oil companies that were going to come in and drill. Egypt, the massive influx of oil and gas capital investments in Egypt, it was looking amazing for Africa. And
Ayuk says, yes, right now, it's terrible that most of these projects are not happening now. But, adds the man who also heads the African Energy Chamber, that does not mean the resources, particularly oil, are going to disappear.
The other thing which I discuss with African presidents and African ministers is, why can't we plan to ensure that Africa determines the next price war? I'll give you an example.
Ayuk is of the firm belief that this may be possible in the future, given the huge losses that the world's traditional oil giants are suffering. He says African energy-producing countries should use the downtime in their industries to plan better policies designed for a world that's now a much more scary, uncertain place.
Those are the conversations we're having with African leaders right now. It is time for crisis talk. It is time for them to really, really change their mindset and then push this forward.
Because he says African energy producers should stop corruption, minimize bureaucracy, and implement policies that make it easier to get licenses to explore. In so doing, they can boost continental oil production, which stood at 8 million barrels a day before the COVID-19 meltdown.
If we improve our production to somewhere around 12 or 13 million, we are going to determine the price of oil and Africa becomes a powerhouse. But also,
Ayuk says the coronavirus emergency is showing Africa that it has not invested enough in gas.
I think it's time for us to diversify from oil. Energy transition is real. Climate change is real. Global pandemics are real. And if we use this opportunity to have plans to make economic diversification and really use gas to power Africa. Africa will be leading with clean technology, and we will be able to take care of our people. And I'm just so honored.
Ayuk says Africa's two biggest economies, Nigeria and South Africa, could become international manufacturing giants if only they could end their regular electricity blackouts. He maintains they could both take big steps towards this by putting money into gas to reduce their reliance on oil and coal. But diversification is a long-term solution to the severe economic recession the coronavirus shutdown is set to cause across Africa. What of the smaller energy businesses on the continent that face bankruptcy because they're not working? Ayuk is advising governments to waive their taxes. He asks banks to grant them loan guarantees so that they don't default on debt. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Cameroon says it has seized fake chloroquine from at least 300 pharmacies and hospitals as people rush to obtain the anti-malaria drug in the unproven belief it can stop the coronavirus. COVID-19 infections have increased to more than 300 in Cameroon since the first case was confirmed in February. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the capital Yaoundé.
Anatole Lobbe, manager of St. Martin's Healthcare, a private hospital in Yaoundé, says that since the government announced that counterfeit chloroquine had been found in hospitals and pharmacies throughout the country, he has been careful not to buy fake drugs that could put the lives of his patients in danger. He says he now buys from officially recognized and trusted pharmacies because the demand for chloroquine is high and many suppliers who want to make quick money without any consideration for the well-being of citizens are producing and selling counterfeit chloroquine. Rose Abondo Ngondombala, Director General of Cameroon's National Drug Quality Control and Valuation Laboratory, says the fake drugs are hurting patients trying to recover from malaria.
L'Organisation Mondiale de la Santé avait déjà alerté.
She says on the 9th of March, Cameroon was notified by the World Health Organization of the circulation of counterfeit anti-malaria drugs in its territory and in neighboring Chad and Nigeria. She says since then, hundreds of doctors and nurses from pharmacies and hospitals in Cameroon have been coming to her office to complain that their patients were not responding to anti-malaria treatment and that they doubted the quality of chloroquine that was supplied to hospitals and pharmacies. Mbala said her laboratory discovered that most of what was sold as chloroquine was a mixture of chalk and water. The rush for chloroquine began after French researchers announced that half of 14 coronavirus patients who underwent therapy with the anti-malaria drug got better, and when U.S. President Donald Trump referred to it as a potential cure for the raging virus. Other researchers say much more testing is needed to make sure the drug is effective and safe to use. Meanwhile, Cameroon's government announced Wednesday that it had sealed two pharmaceutical companies and arrested seven staff members who were producing the counterfeit drugs in the western town of Bafoussam. The government also said some of the fake chloroquine was imported from Nigeria. Local media recently reported that a boat smuggling more than 100,000 tablets of fake chloroquine from Nigeria was intercepted by Cameroon's military. The government has not confirmed that report, but Yao Zakari Alaje, the top health official in the Adamawa Administrative Unit, which shares a boundary with Nigeria, warns the public to beware.
Nous avons essayé de tester avec nos pharmacies. Nous avons constaté que c'était pas de bons produits.
He says three laboratories have confirmed that alcohol mixed with water is being served in many shops and public offices with claims that it disinfects against coronavirus. He says people who bought the product, either for office or home use, should know that it cannot prevent COVID-19. Cameroon's first case of coronavirus was confirmed on February 9. Since then, there have been 8 deaths caused by the virus and 306 cases. The health ministry warns that cases and fatalities will continue to rise if Cameroonians fail to take COVID-19 seriously. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Along with the global coronavirus pandemic, Nigeria also is battling a deadly Lassa fever outbreak that has killed at least 176 people. Doctors say the illness is an endemic problem in West Africa that deserves more attention. Arioke Tang reports from Jos in Nigeria.
Like much of the world, Nigeria is battling the coronavirus pandemic with lockdowns and social distancing. But medical doctor and health blogger Malik King says adequate attention should also be given to another outbreak that is endemic to Nigeria and proving more deadly, Lassa fever.
We have more awareness, people talking about coronavirus more than Lassa fever. But the truth is that Lassa fever is killing people at the moment.
The Nigerian Center for Disease Control, NCDC, which manages disease outbreaks, says that in the first 12 weeks of 2020, there were more than 900 cases of Lassa fever, the highest on record. And while there have been a few deaths in Nigeria from coronavirus, Lassa fever so far this year has killed at least 185 people. Lassa fever is a hemorrhagic fever discovered in 1969. And named after the northeastern town in Nigeria where the first cases occurred. The virus is spread by coming in contact with the feces of infected rats, and it peaks in West Africa during the dry season, especially in Nigeria. Dr. David Esile was working at his infectious disease unit in Owo, Nigeria in 2018, helping Lassa fever patients. Speaking via Skype, he says despite wearing his personal protective equipment, PPE, he caught the illness.
I was the first case of a health worker walking inside the infectious control ward having to get a Lassa fever. And immediately, I was stripped off my PPE and my uniform, and I was given that of a patient. The psychological trauma was there. The stigmatization, in quotes, was also there. The family fear was there. And it was a whole lot.
According to the NCDC, 34 Nigerian health workers have been infected with Lassa fever this year. Head nurse at the infectious disease unit in Jos, Elizabeth Salby, says the lack of protective clothing is a major challenge.
Patients come in already bleeding, which they have gone down with the disease, but did not come to a health facility on time. So in the eagerness of the nurses to take care of these patients, those kind of viruses can then attack their own immune system.
The Nigerian Center for Disease Control says Lassa fever infects between 100,000 to 300,000 people each year across West Africa, killing about 5,000 of them. Jos University Teaching Hospital infectious disease specialist Dr. Samuel Gomorev says early detection is key.
Most of the patients, when they present early, the mortality is very small. But when they present late, the mortality is high. The mortality here used to be up to 40 to 60%. But now with, availability of testing kits, now we could easily be able to identify those patients early. The mortality has dropped to around 20%.
Like coronavirus, there is currently no vaccine to prevent the spread of the Lassa fever virus. Nigerian authorities say research is underway that hopefully will soon lead to a lasting solution to the animal's scourge. Meanwhile, as with the coronavirus, the key to Lassa fever prevention is sanitation and keeping distance from those who may be infected. Ifeoke Etang for VOA News, Jos, Nigeria.
A new United Nations food assessment of 17 West African countries finds more than 19 million people in the region will go hungry during the upcoming lean season between June and September when food stocks are depleted. This is a 77% increase over last year's number and is being complicated further by the coronavirus pandemic. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The World Food Program calls this huge upsurge in the number of hungry people unprecedented. Those who are most at risk, it says, are in the Central Sahel region, which includes Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. Eric Branquer is WFP's Senior Vulnerability Analysis and Mapping Advisor. He says insecurity is a major factor behind the humanitarian crisis affecting the Central Sahel.
We've increased insecurity incidents over the years, and it's continuing to escalate this year. This results as serious movement of population and internally displaced person. On top of that, we obviously have the COVID-19 coming our way.
Branquer notes the food assessment analysis does not include the potential impact of COVID-19 on the region's food security. His colleague, WFP Senior Regional Emergency Preparedness and Response Advisor Alexandre Lecuzia, says COVID-19 is likely to have a profound impact on livelihoods and put the region's 12 million acutely malnourished children at risk. He tells VOA a key concern is that COVID-19 will break the global supply chain, which controls the import of essential products, including supplementary feeding and nutritional products needed to treat malnourished children.
Some of the bigger companies, and indeed the main suppliers globally, are in countries that are currently under strict confinement and a very reduced level of production. A lot of the nutritious products are produced in India or France, for example, where factories have had to reduce or close or reduce significantly their production. We have big concerns on this.
The World Health Organization reports more than 6,000 COVID-19 cases are confirmed in Africa and are threatening fragile health systems on the continent. Its latest report puts the number of cases in Burkina Faso alone at more than 260, including 14 deaths. The UN World Food Program is urgently appealing for $208 million to provide 3 million people in the Central Sahel with life-saving aid over the next 6 months. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Lesotho's embattled Prime Minister Thomas Thabane is accusing members of his own party of plotting to topple his government. The French news agency AFP reported that Thabane today ordered the security forces and intelligence service to probe his party rivals. The 80-year-old Thabane had offered to step down in July after he was accused of complicity in the 2017 murder of his estranged wife. His opponents, however, are pushing for an earlier departure and have teamed up with members of his party with the goal of forming a coalition government. In a televised address to the nation, Thabane expressed shock that members of his party were leading what he described as a campaign to illegally oust him. Factional battles have rocked Thabane's party since last year when, among other things, allegations emerged that he was involved in the killing of his 58-year-old wife, Lipolele Thabane, whom he was in the process of divorcing. Thabane's second wife, Masaya Thabane, whom he married 2 months after Lipolele's death, is considered a co-conspirator in the case. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And with our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hey, Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.